This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today, with a new school year about to begin, we bring you a rebroadcast of our special program in April about the 10th anniversary of the Kalamazoo Promise. Over the course of an hour, we heard from educators, experts, and students. The program originally aired April 21st. We are at the Epic Center in downtown Kalamazoo, and we are going to begin our discussion tonight with Vaughn Washington, Jr. He is the Executive Director of Community Relations for the Kalamazoo Promise. Michelle Miller-Adams, a research fellow at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research and a political science professor at Grand Valley State University. And Martha Warfield, Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion at Western Michigan University, also a member of the Kalamazoo School Board. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for being here. Vaughn Washington, I want to start with you. Give us an idea of what a day or a week is like at the Kalamazoo Promise.
Being in a place where there's so much hope and opportunity for everyone that walks in the door is really an amazing thing. We don't get an opportunity to be in areas of such positivity all the time in our lives. And while we know that the Kalamazoo Promise, once it was announced, was a game changer for many people and continues to be, and because it's promised in perpetuity will always be, we know that there are a number of other things that continue to be challenges for people that achieve the scholarship. So we continue to work on those. So every day, as happy as we are to be able to offer the scholarship to people, we also know that this is a community offering and that the community is asked to step up and continue to help those folks be successful. So it's really wonderful because it impacts every corner of the community. There's not one place you can go where you can't find some way that this is impacting our overall community and its residents.
Martha Warfield, you work at Western Michigan University. As we have heard, the Kalamazoo Promise graduates, when they disperse, many of them do end up at Western. They stay close to home. What do you think it is meant at the university level to have a program like this right in the backyard?
Well, I think Vaughn said that things changed. It was kind of like, let's see what just happened. I remember the day it was announced, and that's what I said. What just happened? And I think the university took the challenge and has been able to not only recognize that we have students in the community, but that we're changing the way we do business in a lot of ways. So that's been one of the side effects and one of the best things that's happened out of the Promise.
So Michelle Miller-Adams, you have tried to study exactly what this has meant to Kalamazoo and beyond in a couple of different books. And what can you say, at this point, 10 years down the road, how is Kalamazoo different? Are there tangible things we can say that have changed in Kalamazoo over the last decade?
Yes. The first thing I want to say, though, is that this program is unique. And in addition to the wonderful changes that Vaughn and Martha have mentioned, we also are running a giant social experiment here. So my colleagues and I at the Upjohn Institute, and I in my research, and you'll hear a little bit later from another colleague of mine, are trying to get our arms around not only what's happened, but what we should even be looking for. It's not like there are models out there that say, oh, when you have a transformative, in perpetuity, incredibly generous scholarship program plopped into your community, this is what you study. Our first job has really been to figure out what to look at. And so we have, over the years, developed some ways of thinking about the Promise. And I think, I'd like to hearken back to something that Vaughn said about this transforming every corner of the community. Really, the only way to think about it is as having effects all along the developmental continuum, from its impact on people in the community paying more attention to early childhood education, to looking at new programs to drive children's literacy levels in elementary school, to high school graduation rates and career readiness and college enrollment and persistence and economic development impacts, including enrollment changes in the school district, migration patterns. We've studied all of those things, and I think it's safe to say we haven't found any negative effects. There are a few areas where we haven't found a lot of effect, but the effects that we have found, which you'll be hearing a little bit more about tonight, have been uniformly positive and exciting, and in some cases unprecedented.
Vaughn, how much do you hear regularly from people in the community that because of the Promise, somebody is doing better in high school, that perhaps the carrot is out there that allows them to go to college that 10, 11, 12 years ago someone didn't think was going to be there?
Yeah. At the time the promise was announced, I was a high school principal. And I was at Kalamazoo Central High School. And I'll never forget waking up maybe 4 or 5 days after it was announced, really with a start, late at night, going, oh, man. I mean, expectations just went out the roof. And so not only were people going to be provided an opportunity that may not have been able to have that before, and or if they were going to have that opportunity, they were going to be approaching college in a different way and ending up financially different. There were going to be great expectations on what we were doing at the school level to assure that everyone is able not only to receive the scholarship, but then benefit from it and use it and have the skills later on. And so we started seeing that right away. So from people that were not going to go to school, they were now going to go to school. For those who were struggling in school at the high school level, they were now trying to do better. We saw a lot of this all over the place. We still had those that still struggled regardless. If I was someone that was in poverty the day before the scholarship was announced, I probably had some of the same issues the day after. And so maybe that wasn't going to be able to be the strongest focus. But overall, everyone felt like there was something new that was inviting them to be a part of the wonderful world that was out there. And they felt like they had access to it. So we hear it all the time. And without exaggeration, there's not a day that goes by. And I don't know many things you could say that about. There's not a day that doesn't go by that I will interact with someone and or Bob in our office with someone that says, hey, our children have it. I had it. And it's made an impact in our lives.
Martha Warfield, as I mentioned, one of your other hats is being on the Kalamazoo School Board. What do you think this has done to the Kalamazoo School District? How is the Kalamazoo School District a different place now than it was 10 years ago?
Well, you don't have enough time tonight to hear all of that.
Give us a brief overview.
Give us a
Cliff Notes version.
Well, first of all, I think the promise opened everybody's eyes to the fact that we have a changing demographic in this country. And students, just like Vaughn said, who were not going to go to school, had a chance to go to school. What did that mean to somebody who didn't have any idea what that meant? Is where the school board had to get pretty busy, because the expectation is that if you have a promise that pays your tuition, everybody ought to take advantage of it. But at the same time, you have to believe it and understand how that works. So I think that the district has done it in a very methodical way, working a long-range plan with students in early childhood, beginning with early reading programs across the community, better than 2,000 or 3,000 families and children have been affected by early reading programs, which I think nobody ever thought that maybe have to start there in order for students to eventually graduate. And then on through the middle school and the high school with students who are now taking advantage of things like advanced placement tests, when in fact in the past they didn't think so much about that. There's always been a group of students who were college going in this community. That's not new. What we are really talking about are the students who weren't college going, who are now becoming college going. And to be able to take the kinds of classes and the advantages that they needed to do to be able to do that. So KPS has done a tremendous job in encouraging students to take advantage of every one of those programs that's available to them. Students have moved out of remission. Students are staying in school, not dropping out. Students are graduating. Students are encouraged to think about college. And just, you know, I sit in the middle of the university and the district, so I see a lot of things going on. But just for example, Western, in collaboration with KPS, now has a program where every sixth grade student in the district has a chance to spend a day on Western's campus. And now we begin to see why we have to follow that up and begin to open up doors for kids. Being there is one thing, seeing it is another thing, but then doing the right things in order to take advantage of that. So the district is doing a number of things in order for students to have a better chance at making selections, making right selections, making good choices, getting the right classes, following up in the community as well as in the schools.
Michelle, you're nodding there. It looks like you'd like to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a couple of, just a couple of data points. One really dramatic change for the school district is that it is a lot larger than it was when the Kalamazoo Promise was announced. This is a district that had decades of declining enrollment, and in the 10 years since the Promise was announced, the district has grown by 24%. That's an unprecedented rate of growth for really any urban school district, most of which are shrinking. And to add to that, as Martha said, the district has really stepped up with a lot of interventions designed to make students more college ready. My colleagues have done some studies about achievement. There's been some evidence of achievement, positive achievement impacts for students who've had the promise available to them. And the really interesting thing about this to me is that the Kalamazoo Promise donors did not give any money to the school district. They created purely a deep, very long-lasting pot of money, and that pot of money has acted as a powerful catalyst for a lot of different things, including a lot of really positive change in the school district. And finally, I think a very important thing that's happened with the school district is that the perceptions of it in the community have improved dramatically. Perceptions are sometimes related to reality and sometimes not, but they're really important in how people think about the school district that serves almost all of our low-income and minority youth in Kalamazoo. And we have the perception of an improving, growing, high-performing school district now, and I don't think that was true maybe 10, 15 years ago.
One of the things that I've taken away from both your books, Michelle, as well as a lot of your research and writing, is that the promise is just one tool. That there are many things that are required if you are going to really use this opportunity to move people out of poverty into college and onto getting a college degree, which then can open up many doors to them.
Yeah, and to return to this notion of the promise as a catalyst, when you think about what the promise is and what it does, it basically gives kids money to go to college, and you want students to make use of that. So then you start thinking about high school graduation and achievement gaps throughout the K through 12 district, and all kids of all races and income groups starting kindergarten with a level playing field, which directs your attention to early childhood. And before you know it, you're thinking about prenatal care. And on the other end, you're thinking about engaging employers and housing and job creation. And so the tentacles of this thing really spread into many parts of the community, which is partly what makes it really fascinating to study and potentially transformative.
Vaughn, where are things in terms of getting students to actually take advantage of the promise? I mean, you know, nothing is 100%, but are we at least trending in that direction right now?
Well, absolutely. Over the last 5 years, 95% of the students that graduate each year from the Kalamazoo Public Schools over the last 5 years are attending college. Now, we're very interested in how they're doing, and we're very interested in college completion. But we do know that the numbers have gone up for those who are giving it a shot, that are attempting to go. And that means a lot for schools like Western, Kalamazoo Valley Community College, who get the lion's share of the students, because then they are then forced to step up their game to make sure that students are successful, and they've done that in a number of ways. A number of the things that Michelle has mentioned, the best part about that was when the promise was announced, none of that was announced, that it was a requirement. There was no requirement for anybody to do anything else other than graduate, be within a few of the criteria, and receive the scholarship. There was no requirement for anybody to step up outside of the school system. There was no requirement for people within the school system to do anything different than they were doing the day before. Those things weren't there. This was given to a community to see what a community would do. And thus far, after 10 years, a number of things have gone extremely well, one being getting the scholarship to the students. One of the things that we're very excited about, and Bob Jorth was the longest standing employee of the Kalamazoo Promise, he makes sure that people get their money. One of the worst things that could happen is you be standing at the registrar's office and they're dropping your classes because your scholarship's not there. So you don't want something that's so wonderful to have a whole bunch of hiccups. And so over the first 10 years, getting the scholarship in place, getting the database in place, making sure that the articulation with the colleges and universities are there, present, and positive, has been really, really good. And so a lot of the things that were mentioned, that Martha will mention, Michelle has mentioned, and myself, we're going to continue to delve into in the next 10 years, and I think we're probably going to talk about that later.
Yeah, Martha, we're going to hear from people at Western and KVCC in the next segment. But from where you sit as an educator and who has been an educator for a long time, do you see that students are perhaps being able to address that issue of debt? We hear so much about, you know, student loans and students who just can't afford to go. Is the Kalamazoo Promise one of the tools which is addressing that issue, at least here in our backyard?
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, you hear from both KVCC and the coach at Western that financial literacy is a part of being part of the promise. So students who are in both of those institutions are going to have that kind of information as part of being at the university. You're going to know, you know, sometimes you think, okay, I get free tuition, but that doesn't buy your books. That doesn't pay for room and board. That doesn't pay for some fees. You may be working two or three classes and you're losing credits because you're not finishing. So then you have maybe a chance not to have the promise pay up while you do some things that you have to get back in order. So, yeah, it's a tremendous part of what I think the students have to learn, not only in terms of a curriculum, but also the finances for it. That's not just the promise students, but that's all students are having to take a look at that. But there's one important piece that I think, and I know our time is limited, but I do want to say that at Western, the changes that, and Vaughn mentioned, the step up that universities had to make and the valleys had to make, was also a funded program, one of very few in the country and the only one in the Midwest, that has given us a chance to take a look. How do we deliver information? And what is it that we have to do that makes it possible for students to be successful? And in fact, are we understanding what the cultural implications are of students who've never been in that position before? So this means that we could have some transformational changes in the way we deliver information. And for an educator, I think that's about the most exciting thing I think I've seen in a long time.
Michelle, one of the chapters, I believe, in your first book is called A Not-So-Simple Gift. Mm-hmm. Does some of the discussion we've already had here tonight shown why maybe it is not just so simple as writing checks, which are then cashed for tuition and fees?
Janice Brown, who's the closest we have to a mother of the Kalamazoo Promise, always says the money is only half the battle, then there's everything else. And the everything else is hard. And I refer to it as, a lot of us refer to it as, community alignment. Are all the different actors in the community doing their job with an eye to maximizing the impact of this program? Are the tutoring programs delivering high quality tutoring, and do the mentoring programs have enough mentors, and are the realtors trying to sell houses in the Kalamazoo Public Schools District? And that alignment, it can be really tough to achieve, and both the funding for the scholarship and that alignment piece are critical to a place-based scholarship like the Kalamazoo Promise having that transformative effect for families, for the school district, and for the community.
Well, we've come to our first break in the program. We're going to have Michelle Miller-Adams and Vaughn Washington join us again at the end. We do want to thank Martha Warfield. She is Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion at Western Michigan University and also a member of the Kalamazoo School Board. We will take a break and come back at the Epic Theater in downtown Kalamazoo. Next up, we're going to hear from officials at Western Michigan University, Kalamazoo Valley Community College, as well as a 2006 Kalamazoo High School graduate. This is WMUK's West Southwest. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today, we are bringing you a rebroadcast of our special program earlier this year about the 10th anniversary of the Kalamazoo Promise. The program was recorded in April at the Epic Center Theater in downtown Kalamazoo. For this segment, we're joined by Montese Morales. She's the Kalamazoo Promise coach at Kalamazoo Valley Community College. Ron Dillard is the director of Western Michigan University's Kalamazoo Promise program. And Amy Oliveris is part of that first graduating class of Kalamazoo Promise recipients. She graduated in 2006. She has gone on to college since then and is now in a program at Grand Valley State University where she's teaching. Thank all of you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll start with you, Montese. Give us your day at the Kalamazoo Valley Community College. When a Kalamazoo Promise recipient walks in, what are some of the things that you're going to deal with and talk to them about?
sometimes it kind of depends if Bob is calling me in the morning. So basically we deal with two types of students. The first student is probably your first year student, and they come in and they have to fill out two applications. One is the actual application, which generally they fill out in their high school, but I have those on deck as well. And then they fill out what is called their scholarship acceptance form. They have to fill that out for any university or community college that they go to, and this allows for financial aid to actually process their monies. So once we go through that, then we have a requirement form that kind of asks them a series of questions and lets them know that they have to have a 2.0 or a 75% successful course completion rate in order to keep the promise. So we do FAFSA, financial aid. Our goal at Kalamazoo Valley is completion and to keep students out of debt. So typically a lot of students don't know what that means. It's tuition based, so they think, oh, my books are covered, my bus pass and things like that. So then I work with them in financial aid to make sure if they do qualify that a bus pass is included and that their books are covered as well.
There's other financial aid that students may be eligible for beyond the Kalamazoo Promise.
Absolutely. So my goal is to use financial aid that's not in the form of a loan. So if there's private money available, if there's scholarships out there, those are the funds that I typically try to tap into first.
Ron Dillard, Western Michigan University. You have a student walk through your door who says, hey, I'm a Kalamazoo Promise recipient. What are some of the things you're going to talk to them about? Is it similar?
Well, right now, if a student walks through my door, they're usually looking for someone other than myself because I've been in this role for about 6 weeks. But when they come to the door, I introduce myself. I make them aware that the program is here and that we're here to support them. I give them a business card, and I invite them to sit down and give them a little background on myself. And I just ask questions about what this program can do to support them on their journey to receive a degree.
Okay, I'll come back to you two in a moment, but let's talk to our 2006 Promise recipient, Amy Olivares. So in the fall of 2005, let's say September, before we had this announcement about the Kalamazoo Promise, you were a senior in high school. What were your plans after graduation?
Well, at that time, I did have another scholarship called the Incentive Scholarship for Bilingual Students, and I was planning on using that. However, when I heard about the Kalamazoo Promise, it opened up more doors for anything that wasn't covered by the incentive. I had that extra support behind me.
Is it fair to say that the Kalamazoo Promise changed the trajectory of these last 10 years for you?
Very much so. When the Kalamazoo Promise was announced, I didn't fully understand. I wasn't aware of what that meant. I wasn't aware of college expenses. I was the first person in my family to attend college. But in the first semester, when you get the bill, even though it was eventually paid for, then I realized what was going on. But because of the Kalamazoo Promise and my other scholarship, I was able to graduate 100% debt-free, and I was able to continue on to my graduate studies with ease, without any hassle, without worries.
Okay, where did you attend college?
I did both my studies, undergraduate and graduate studies, at Western Michigan University.
Okay, and tell people what you're doing now.
I teach Spanish at Grand Valley State University. And I just wanted to mention as well that last year and this year, I have students who are recipients also of the Kalamazoo Promise.
We had a question come from the audience, and I'm going to direct this one to Montese. It seems to me that in recent years, more attention has been paid to community college programs that lead to associate's degrees, tech certifications, and that sort of thing. Can you please talk about this? Is that some of the people that you will talk to, and does that in any way impact what you're trying to do with them in terms of directing them to financial aid, et cetera?
So the second part of what we do at Kalamazoo Valley, we also have a Promise counselor. Her name is C.G. Gamble, and she handles the academic portion for our students. So the initial contact appointment is with me to get them acclimated with the system, financial aid in place, and then C.G. will handle all of their academic planning. We know that studies show that attending a community college, you have a better success rate once you transfer to a university. So yes, a lot of influence has been put on our tech programs because you're more employable when you do those. So we have two-year programs. We have apprenticeships that set meetings up with companies for our students once they graduate. Then they don't want to go to a four-year right now. They can get their certificate or they can get that two-year degree and start working.
So Montese and Ron, I'm going to direct this to you and maybe you guys can talk this out a little bit. But I wonder if maybe the oversimplified explanation of what happens with the promise is that a student who is thinking that they're not going to go to college ends up going through the door at KVCC, and a student who maybe thinks they were going to go to a community college, primarily because of cost, ends up going through the door at Western. Is that too simple?
Well, we all know that Kalamazoo Valley and Western, we're a team, we have a partnership. So as Ron said, he just got into his position, so we've met to make sure that our students know who he is and vice versa in case something happens at WMU and they have to come back or they graduate from us and transition. We have a program called the Focus Program, which is the sister program to WMU that sets up tours and everything like that, gets applications waived so that our students can kind of go into Western seamlessly. So it can be simple and it can be complicated at some points. It just depends how successful the student is.
Ron, do you see students, and I know, again, you've been there 6 weeks, but or do you anticipate seeing students who maybe used the promise, went to KVCC, got an associate's, and now they see the opportunity to continue their education at Western and still have the promise to pay the bills?
Absolutely. I'm coming from financial aid at Western, so I'm very sensitive to how students are using the promise. As we all are aware, the promise has limitations with regards to credit hours, and so I want to make sure that the students get the most bang for their buck. So I am in contact with Montese if I have a question about a student in particular who is from KVCC. My background is in teaching, so I'm also aware that students come in with a wide array of learning styles and abilities. So I approach it as a student myself. I am a student of the student, and I'm asking a lot of questions so that I can better assist them along their journey.
Amy, I want to maybe go back to when you were in college.
Mm-hmm.
How different was it for you to be someone who had the Kalamazoo Promise paying a lot of the freight for you to attend school? And I'm sure you had to know some students along the way who didn't have that sort of opportunity and didn't have something like the Promise. Was it? Do you think it made your college experience different from theirs in a meaningful way?
Yes, very much so. While everyone was filing financial aid or looking for scholarships or worrying about a high cutoff line for a GPA for their scholarships, I was able to relax and just focus on my studies. And that anxiety left. Also, because I was the first generation, during that time, Western offered the first year of room and board to be free, and they eventually extended it up until the 4 years that I was there. Coming from a family of six total, and me being the oldest, that was very beneficial. And I think seeing a few friends that actually dropped out of college because they didn't have that luxury, I was able to make it. And I saw a lot of people leave. I mean, it's unfortunate, but because of the Kalamazoo Promise, I always had that cushion.
Amy brings up an interesting point, the first generation in their family to go to college. Montese, do you see that still often at KVCC, that someone who comes in to see you, their parents didn't go to college, maybe no siblings have yet gone to college, that this is a whole different experience for that family?
Absolutely. In this day and age, you may think that it's not as common, but it is. So like Ron shared, he's a student of the student. I use my experiences as being a first generation student and everything that I didn't know going off to college. Even though the millennials are online, they still don't look into their phones and read emails and, accept the money that they're supposed to get. So it's a lot of things that we have to go through with them to get them acclimated into the college system. You have to check your Moodle account. You have to check your email. You have to say yes to the money that you're accepting. You have to go to class. You have to read your syllabus. So for me, when a student comes in and they don't know, it's like I'm looking at myself 20 years ago.
Ron, do you see first generation students at Western?
Yes, I do. And in addition to my background in financial aid, I was also a campus coach with the CETA Scholars Program at Western. And many of those students don't have family privilege. So not only are they, many of them, first generation, but they don't have the luxury of being able to call mom and dad for advice about anything. So I've had my fair share of experience, and I am also a first-generation college student as well.
All three of you, then. Montese, looking ahead, what do you think is the next challenge that you think you have to tackle at KVCC when it comes to the Kalamazoo Promise? Do you see something on the horizon?
I think the next challenge is we're doing a good job, and thank you to the donors. This is a very, very generous gift that the students are receiving. Bob is a very, very generous person in Second Chances. He does give students grace. As we know, all students don't have a very successful first semester, especially coming in as a first gen or maybe being underprepared leaving high school. So moving forward, I am working with the high schools, making sure I'm visible, bringing them on tours. And my goal is to take back data to the high school and say, hey, based on SAT scores and based on our Compass scores, these are the things that I would suggest that you work with your students on. Students that are coming in and maybe coming at just at level, at like 079, because you only have 130 credits, my goal is to help them use them as wise as possible. And sometimes when students are underprepared, they may soak up 10 or 12 of those credits and remedial studies. So my goal in the next couple of years is to work with the high schools and let them know, look, this is what the tests are showing. Let's figure out a way to work with students on so they're coming in at level when they come to the college.
Ron, do you see anything at Western? Again, I know you've just been on the job for a little bit, but is there a plan that you kind of have as you look ahead and you say, here is something that maybe hasn't been addressed the way it should, and it's something I want to tackle?
Many of the students that I've been speaking with have talked about the challenge of them not going away to college. And I've spoken to quite a few students who are interested in seeing the world. So we are actually incorporating a study abroad component with our Kalamazoo Promise program, because Western is part of the three pillars is that we are globally engaged. And so we're going to be very serious and focused about being globally engaged. We want to go overseas and see what our students can learn there.
Amy, I want to go back to what you said earlier. You've seen some Kalamazoo Promise students come through where you're teaching now at Grand Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Does this reinforce the idea that this is something that is meant to go on and is meant to be there for, this 10 years, the next 10 years and 10 years, et cetera, beyond that?
Yes, very much so. There's one girl in particular who actually comes from the same neighborhood that I come from. She went to Kalamazoo Central, and she is also first-year generation. She doesn't come from a home with a lot of support. Just like Ron said, she can't call home and ask her parents questions. And I had her for two semesters. She took me twice. And I loved having her in my class because she would come into my office hours, and I could relate to her. And I would try to guide her as best as I could. But because we shared those similar experiences and coming from the same community, we could touch base a lot. And I don't know if that helped her in any way, but those were my hopes.
Is this part of the infrastructure that we were talking about maybe in the last segment, that it's beyond the scholarship of the promise? There has to be some other things. And maybe one of those things is some assistance for those first-generation college students who might not be in college without the promise, but now that they're there, of course, everyone wants them to succeed. Montese, you want to take that?
I know at Kalamazoo Valley, we have a student success center. So if I don't have the answer to something, I know someone on our floor does. So we have what we call success advocates. After they see myself and CG, if they still need assistance with goal setting, how to study, different tools and tips like that, our advocates help them in that area. If a student comes to me and says, I'm struggling, we also pull progress reports twice a semester so that we can kind of monitor their grades and have dialogue with their instructors and also direct them back to their instructors to build a relationship. And then we may get services from our tutoring department as well.
Ron, is there something similar at Western?
one of the things that I've enjoyed doing so far in the six weeks is meeting with students and parents. It's very, very important that parents are on board and that they know what we're talking about with their student. Many times I've found that students can be forgetful or they will lose the notes, but mom usually doesn't or dad usually doesn't. That's one of the components that I'm really focusing on is connecting with parents and connecting with the community so that the community wraps their arms around these students and helps them through college. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. There are many resources at Western, and I just want to partner with the students to connect them to those resources because a lot of times their needs or their wants can be met right there on campus.
Ron Dillard, Montez Morales, and Amy Oliveris, thank all of you for joining us here tonight. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ron Dillard is director of Western Michigan University's Kalamazoo Promise program. Montez Morales is Kalamazoo Promise coach at Kalamazoo Valley Community College. And Amy Oliveris is part of the first class of Kalamazoo Promise recipients. She graduated from high school in 2006 and is now teaching Spanish at Grand Valley State University. We're going to take a break and come back for one final segment. We are at the Epic Theater in downtown Kalamazoo discussing the Kalamazoo Promise 10 years after the first graduating class picked up its diplomas. This is WMUK's West Southwest. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today we are presenting a rebroadcast of our special program on the 10th anniversary of the Kalamazoo Promise. It was recorded at the Epic Center Theater in downtown Kalamazoo and originally aired April 21st. We're going to talk about the future of Kalamazoo and scholarship programs in general. We're joined now by Brad Hirschbein, who's an economist with the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. He's recently co-authored some studies on the Kalamazoo Promise's impact on college enrollment and completion, as well as the benefit programs of scholarship programs in general. And we welcome back Michelle Miller Adams, research fellow at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research and political science professor at Grand Valley State University, and Vaughn Washington, Jr., executive director of community relations for the Kalamazoo Promise. Brad Hirschbein, I'm going to start with you since you're first time up here. Give us the Cliff Notes version of the studies that you have done. Let's start with the one on the benefits of the Kalamazoo Promise. What did this show about college attendance and completion?
Thank you, Gordon. The short answer is that it boosted college attendance and college completion by quite a large amount. We found that enrollment after the promise was enacted went up by about 25% relative to what it had been before. And not only were these students just going to college, they were actually persisting and finishing too, which is what really I think many people care about. We found that college completion, any college completion for any certificate or degree, went up by about a third. So before the promise, around 35-36% of Kalamazoo public school graduates were actually completing. After the promise, that went up to about 48%. And most of those completions were actually driven by bachelor's degrees. So about a third more students who are taking advantage of, or just graduating rather, are actually finishing now. So that went from about 30% to 40%.
You've also studied what we would call the bang for the buck of this type of scholarship program, a universal scholarship program, which does not have any links to grade point average, isn't determined by how much money your family makes, that everybody gets it. And what's the takeaway here? Is this a good investment? Is that one way to put it?
In a word, yes. So there's a lot of concern that a universal scholarship like the Kalamazoo Promise, the simplicity of it is great, but some of the money is inevitably going to go to some students who otherwise would have completed college anyway. But despite that, the money seems to be stretching pretty far. And that we did a benefit cost analysis where we looked at how much money the promise was spending on all of the students and what kinds of earnings returns the beneficiaries of the promise could expect to receive from getting additional education and what those returns would be over their lifetimes. And we found overall that the promise's benefits outweighed the costs by a ratio of nearly 5 to 1. And even for many of the different subgroups we looked at, for women versus men, for low-income students and non-low-income students, for students of color, and as well as white students. For most of these groups, it was still very cost effective with the benefits outweighing the cost by at least 2 to 1.
Michelle, you've looked at this very question of is it worth doing this as a universal scholarship? What are the benefits of doing that? You know, I believe that one of the comments on the Brookings Institution website after your study came out was, well, couldn't you just focus on this group of students who wouldn't have got to college and graduated, you know, whatever you're talking about here, you know, the going from 36-48%, focus on them. Focus all the money on them, and then you don't need to worry about everybody else. But Michelle, you have studied this, and you say that there is a really good argument for doing this as a universal scholarship. What's that?
Well, thank you for asking me that question, Gordon, because as I think you know, this is something I feel pretty passionately about when it comes to the structure of Promise programs. There are about 80 such programs around the country now, most of them at much smaller, less generous funding levels than the Kalamazoo Promise. But only about half of those are universal in the sense that the Kalamazoo Promise is that everyone who meets the enrollment and residency requirements of the Kalamazoo Promise will get a scholarship to go to whatever institution they can get into. And to me, this is an incredibly important feature of the Kalamazoo Promise for, I guess, really three reasons. One is that if you want to transform the culture of a school district, it's really important to be able to say to every child sitting in that school district, yes, there is something in this for you. You have the opportunity to go on to some kind of post-secondary institution, instead of saying, you, if you have a 2.5 GPA and a 90% attendance requirement, can go on with a scholarship. It's much more powerful in terms of transforming school culture to have that universal message. The second reason is that from the standpoint of the community buying into the program, I think, as Vaughn said earlier, every corner of this community feels touched by the Kalamazoo Promise. People without children, people without college-age children, people who don't even live in Kalamazoo. The Kalamazoo Promise comes across as being for the community, not for a particular subset of students. And that creates a really strong drive for people to do whatever they can to support the success of these students. The last reason why, for me, universal eligibility is so important is that merit-based requirements favor better prepared students who also tend to be, are more likely to be non-poor and white. And so if you are serious about creating a drive toward greater equality of opportunity for your low-income and minority populations, a universal program is really the best structure to do that. So those are my feelings about universal scholarship programs.
But what about targeting for income? What about saying we are going to help the students who, based on a number of factors, we believe would not be able to afford to go to college, as opposed to helping the student who we almost know certainly would be able to go to college without something like the Kalamazoo Promise?
So we already have a lot of scholarships that are targeted toward income, and the biggest one are the federal Pell Grants. You need to be below a certain income level to receive federal financial aid, and that is grant aid of the kind that was mentioned in the previous session. So the Kalamazoo Promise is really seeking to do something different, and it is that transformative goal. It's very hard to achieve that kind of school culture or community transformation if you are saying to your school population and to the people in the community, this is a scholarship for low-income students, or this is a scholarship for smart low-income students. What is something has not come up yet that's really important, the structure of the Kalamazoo Promise among Promise programs is uniquely generous. It is a first dollar program. So students get their Kalamazoo Promise first, and then if they qualify for other needs-based aid, they get to add that on top of the Kalamazoo Promise. And so lower-income students are getting more resources than non-low-income students. We also know that people above the cutoff for federal financial aid, people in the middle class, people in the lower middle class, struggle hugely with college affordability and with overly high debt loads. So the Kalamazoo Promise is one of the few things that's come along to really address those challenges.
Vaughn, I mentioned earlier that nothing is 100%, and that includes college completion rates. So what do you see as happening in the next 10 years that might be helping more students who receive the Kalamazoo Promise then go on to college and ultimately get their college degree?
And that ties right into the last question that Michelle was answering. And this gives us an opportunity. The generosity of this scholarship allows us to take a look at what's working well and what's not working so well. And it doesn't try to create a guarantee that everything works well. And so it gives us an opportunity to take a look at the things and the areas in our community where we're struggling in and really have emphasis on those. And so as we look forward to the next 10 years, we know that there are a number of students, and we mentioned 95% of the students were stepping foot on a college campus, but we know that some of those students struggle, and they struggle tremendously, and they struggle right away. It's not like it's a gradual struggle. It's a struggle immediately, whether or not I can't navigate how to buy books in the bookstore, which for some people may seem like, oh, come on, you gotta be kidding me. That's a reality. As opposed to, and I don't know if you've ever had a time when you sat in a room and you thought everyone else in the room had it together, but you didn't. This happens a lot to people. And so the next 10 years is really gonna focus on what the community can do, how we can use the other assets in this community to try to put an emphasis on making sure students are successful, how families can understand better the scholarship so they can use it for transformation. For example, we save money for our kids to go to college. Now our kids receive a scholarship. What do we do with those funds? How does that translate back into the community and what's going to happen there? As well as working with a myriad of institutions and or organizations in this community that have a life's work helping people with a particular issue, whether it's homelessness, whether it's folks that are in poverty, whether it's with medical help. There are folks trying to do this work, and coordinating those efforts in a way that we make sure that no one is missed has to be the next 100% type of thing that we're doing. This is 100%, and it's promised in perpetuity, so it's here forever. We cannot operate around it as if it's not going to be. And it's hard to do because typically we say nothing's promised. Tomorrow's never promised. You know, folks used to say it to you all the time. But how does a community operate when they have something they know is going to be there? How would you operate if you knew you were going to have the same amount of money tomorrow as you had today, and it wasn't a successful amount of money? If you knew you were always going to have it, you'd probably go about things differently. That's a part of that community transformation.
Brad, I want to go back again to some of the numbers on who is actually benefiting from the Kalamazoo Promise, because that's probably some of what Vaughn's getting at there, is what's working, what isn't. Who do we see doing well in Kalamazoo Public Schools, going on to do well in college, you know, broken down by demographics?
Before I get into that, if I may, I want to build on something that Vaughn just said. And one of the more striking and amazing things about the Promise is that the additional source of money and that the Promise brings about does not seem to crowd out other forms of aid, by which I mean that in many other cases, if a new source of financial aid comes about, oftentimes we've seen the financial institution ratchet back some of the aid that they would have given to the student. Rather, in the case of the Promise, that money seems to be crowded in. It's leveraging the money on top of the money the institution's already spending, but instead it frees it up to engage in the types of programs that we've heard about. And because it is permanent and we know it's there, the institutions can actually build and develop long-term planning to provide the resources to help those students in additional ways. So I think that that's actually a very important finding, and it's rather different than other sources of financial aid that we've seen come about.
Any idea why that might be? I mean, is there a theory out there even?
I think fundamentally it's because it's a community-based program at its heart. And part of the transformative aspect of it that Michelle and Vaughn have been talking about is that there is a level of community engagement, that it is universal, that it is for everyone. And that causes and encourages other people in the community, from the institutions to other volunteers to the school district system and others, to change their behavior and engage in ways that help, in ways that if it were not a universal system, probably would not happen.
So again, back onto the demographic question about, you know, who is really benefiting here in Kalamazoo? Can we break it down demographically that some groups are doing better than others?
Sure. There is the case that some groups are doing better than others. In particular, women seem to be doing much better than men, which is common in education, especially these days, that they tend to respond more particularly to financial aid. But we also found, encouragingly, that students of color were particularly benefiting from the program more so than white students. And one of the things that was also encouraging to us is that students who had grown up low income seemed to benefit about the same rate as students who grew up more economically fortunate. So there was not a difference between those two groups.
Was that a surprise? I mean, because I've often heard that there are programs that come along and people assume that it's going to lift the bottom up. And in fact, maybe it does. But people at the top who you know, maybe come from an a background with parents who are educated and of means, that they actually benefit a little bit more. I mean, as a researcher, when you started to go into this, were you surprised by the findings?
Yes, a little bit less on the women versus men, because there had been previous studies that had found similar things, but particularly for students of color versus white students and for low-income students compared to the more economically fortunate, we were surprised at the results we did find, particularly that students of color benefited as much as they did, considerably more than the white students.
So Michelle, I mentioned that you have written a couple of books on the promise. The most recent one is called Promise Nation, and what you've examined here is the growth of Promise programs. What growth have we seen, and do we expect it to keep growing in the decade ahead?
Yeah, I think so. Just in the past week, my colleagues and I have worked with two new communities that are considering developing a Promise program, one in Michigan, one in Pennsylvania. There's interest really all around the country in this, and increasingly, one thing that's really fascinating is that a number of states have opted to make community college free for their residents. The first state to do so was last year, that was Tennessee, through something called the Tennessee Promise. The state of Oregon has joined them, and there are probably another 10 states that are considering doing this. There are also some initiatives around free community college at the federal level that are unlikely to be passed into law anytime soon. But it's really fascinating to see the growth and the spread, the diffusion of these grassroots, these very local programs, and then see them start to affect state and national policy. This is a really typical way that policies spread in the U.S. Things get creative ideas, crazy ideas, things you've never thought of get pioneered at the local level, and then they sort of bubble out to surrounding communities. That's very much the process that we've seen. As I said, there are about 80 programs now that can be considered these place-based scholarship programs. But I want to add, and I had the opportunity today to talk to some middle schoolers at the YMCA today about college and career, and I was busy trying to convince them that they are uniquely privileged because the Kalamazoo Promise is the single most generous of these 80 programs. And I think we forget that sometimes. It really opens up a lot of opportunities through the flexible structure and the guarantee in perpetuity and the first dollar structure, and in fact the maximum amount that the promise will fund for people. This is the most generous program in the country, and we shouldn't lose sight of that here in Southwest Michigan.
How much variation is there? I mean, are there a fair number of programs which maybe not as generous as Kalamazoo are still a similar model in terms of being universal? And are there many other programs where people are, you know, putting a grade point average requirement on it, that sort of thing?
They split about half and half between being having those merit requirements and having the universal structure. But many of these 80 programs are much smaller in terms of where students can go to college, sometimes restricted to a single local community college, sometimes restricted to a group of community colleges that are in the region. That's the case for the Detroit Promise, sometimes restricted to just two-year programs. But what's common among these programs is that these scholarship programs are all being used by their stakeholders as tools for alignment, as tools to improve how communities do their work of educating their young people, as tools to make their community more attractive, more vital, and to better serve their youth, many of whom are low income. So they share some features, and then there's a lot of heterogeneity. In fact, if you look closely at the program rules, there are really no two programs that are exactly alike. So that's very challenging from a research standpoint, but we're working on it.
Of course, the Kalamazoo Promise is privately funded. Are there places out there which are attempting to do this with any public money?
There are a very few that are trying to use public money. There is one model here in Michigan. There are 10 communities, the Michigan Promise Zones, that were inspired by the Kalamazoo Promise, where it's a three-part funding model with federal Pell Grants, local philanthropic dollars, and then a portion of the state education tax that after a couple of years starts to flow back to those communities. So this is a very innovative structure, and the results of it are really starting just now to become powerful. But private funding, whether philanthropic, corporate, individual, is really the dominant model for these place-based scholarship programs.
Vaughn, how often do you get a phone call from somebody somewhere else in the country who just says, hey, we've heard about this Kalamazoo Promise thing, and it sounds pretty neat, and we want to try it here in Anytown, USA? Does that happen quite a bit?
Yeah, you know, every week we get somebody who has started. There are programs, as Michelle was talking about, they just have a name. they've started off such and such promise, and where do we go from there? And many people want to know about the money that was put together to start it. And, you know, a lot of times that can be a really tough conversation for many because we were so very fortunate. This thing was announced, and then there it was. There wasn't a whole lot of backstory that we're all fully aware of about how that took place. So they have those questions. But, yeah, a week doesn't go by that typically we don't run into someone or someone gives us a call and says we're trying to do something at a particular level. So we're talking to people's chambers of commerce, PTO meetings. We're on conference calls with anybody in a particular corner that thinks this is the right thing to do, and or whether or not economic development can come into play for their community and those types of things. One of the other unique factors about the scholarship, and you've heard quite a few, is that I'm not aware of any other, and Michelle can help me and Brett. This is a opportunity to use a scholarship over 10 years. I believe the majority of the others are what's be considered use it and or lose it, like most scholarships that any of us would have had an opportunity to have. And the generosity of scholarship is what dictates that, because most people couldn't afford you to show up 3 years later and say, hey, I'm ready. My life is on track now, and or start, then have to take a pause for whatever reason, life getting in the way, and then come back to it. And so that's a really unique feature to this particular scholarship as well. But we do get requests every day.
When Bob Jorth came to speak at the school where my kids attend, he mentioned that there are still some students right now receiving aid who graduated high school in 2006, that there's still some out there.
I'm here to tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen, there are some people that are really furiously studying at this moment to make this work. And it's in the double digits by far, but they're trying to make sure that they utilize the dollars that they have.
So the one requirement that you have to complete to be able to get those scholarship dollars is you have to graduate from high school. And I would feel that we're remiss if we didn't say that that is a really important challenge for the next 10 years. 95% of students who graduate get the scholarship, but Kalamazoo Public Schools does not have a 100% graduation rate. The rates are improving slowly in a very sticky fashion, and the district is working really, really hard on that. But I think that's a really critical part of our community work going forward.
All right, almost out of time here. So Michelle, I'm going to ask you one last question to wrap it up. You mentioned 80 programs right now, place-based scholarship. If we were all to reconvene here in 10 years, what's your best guess about how many more programs we could be talking about nationwide? Again, I understand it's a guess.
10 years?
Yeah.
So 10 years, I think, I don't know, Brad, will community college be free in 10 years?
In some states, I would think so.
Yeah, so it's going to look a little different because you're going to have a pretty big handful of states that are going to be providing free community college. So these place-based scholarship programs will be able to really focus on that four-year option. And I'd say, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to have a few hundred. I don't know. Is that a crazy number?
No,
what do you guys think?
Given the rate of growth, that seems pretty in line.
Yep. We'll have to come back in a decade and find out, right? Thank you very much for being here tonight.
Thank you, Gordon. Thank you.
Michelle Miller-Adams is a research fellow at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research, also a political science professor at Grand Valley State University. Brad Hirschbein's an economist with the Upjohn Institute. Von Washington Jr. is executive director of community relations from the Kalamazoo Promise. We also heard earlier from Montes Morales, Kalamazoo Promise coach at Kalamazoo Valley Community College, Ron Dillard, director of Western Michigan University's Kalamazoo Promise program, and Amy Oliveris, part of the first class of Kalamazoo Promise recipients graduating high school in 2006. And we heard earlier from Martha Warfield, who is vice president of diversity and inclusion at Western Michigan University and a member of the Kalamazoo School Board. We want to thank the Arts Council of Greater Kalamazoo for providing us with space at the Epic Theater in the Epic Center in downtown Kalamazoo. And thanks as well to part of the WMUK staff, Anders Dahlberg, Andy Robbins, and Martin Clem, for helping make this special possible. We have been at the Epic Theater in downtown Kalamazoo. This has been a special edition of WMUK's West Southwest. The special program on the Kalamazoo Promise was recorded at the Epic Center Theater in downtown Kalamazoo. It originally aired April 21st. The special program on the Kalamazoo Promise originally aired April 21st. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.